It's time for Windows Weekly, and there's a scandal of brewing. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley talk about the problems with the newest version of Windows, 1803. Also, are you ready for SharePoint in VR? It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 571, recorded Wednesday, May 23rd, 2018. Wine slushies. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/windows. And by Moogsoft, reduce IT alerts and tickets by up to 99%. What? Yes! Visit Moogsoft.com to learn more and sign up for a demo. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft. And there's news from... We should make this a musical. What do you say, kids?
Not a big fan of musicals.
Not a big fan?
Not a big song and dance guy.
Oh, no. I'm surprised. Neither of you?
No, really, I hate musicals.
New York, you
have
live
you ever,
in...
Have you ever seen us in a crowd of people?
No, yeah, that's right. But, okay, you're loners. You're troubled loners. I understand. That's Mary Jo Foley. She lives near the Great White Way, but does she go to Broadway? No, she stays at home and writes about Microsoft all the time.
Well, I do other things. I do other things, too, but I don't go to the Great White Way. You are correct.
Gosh, if I lived in New York,
I'd
be...
More of a community theater kind of person.
Yeah, right. Mary Jo's blog is all about Microsoft.com on CDNet. And then there's Paul Thurrott. What can we say about Paul?
That's complimentary. Let's keep it short.
Where can we begin? Are you at home, Paul?
I am at home. Yep.
Okay. Okay.
Yep, I know.
It looks like a hotel room. I'm just saying.
Still hard to tell. I know. Sorry.
Paul is also I don't know what he is. He's also one of those.
Yes, I am.
And he writes about Microsoft.
A asshole in the off season.
Yes.
Paul is best known for
his
Twitter rampages.
There you go. And the dad jokes about Call of Duty.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That's
a body of work of which anyone should be proud.
That's why I should show up on time from now on to avoid these embarrassing dad jokes on Twitter.
It was painful.
Paul is at Thurrott, thurrodoublegood.com, and he is also the author of many a book at leanpub.com. And now today we are together once again to discuss 1803 and its aftermath.
Microsoft's latest success.
This is normal, though. Every time there's a big update like this, there's problems.
Actually,
no.
The last two went really well, and I think it kind of set us up to be a little used to that.
Uh-oh.
What? Optimistic.
How bad is it? Is it really bad?
I think it's really bad.
Now, Mary Jo, I updated. I was a seeker and updated the NVX2.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Without a blue screen, nary a blue screen.
Wow.
That's good.
So I don't.
I don't know. I had a pool cleaner issue, guys.
You had a pool cleaner? You don't even have a pool. Yep.
Yeah. Tony was just out there in his short shorts cleaning the pool.
And the irony is, you have the 8 gigabyte memory. I have just a scant 4.
Right.
I haven't had any problems with 1803. In fact, on any of my systems. So what are the problems people are experiencing?
So here's the tricky thing about this. There are lots of people like you who say to us, I don't even know what you're talking about. Everything went great. It upgraded. I had no issues. Didn't have a blue screen. Didn't have anything go wrong. Then there's a bunch of other people who are posting in forums and other places, Reddit, other like support Microsoft support channels, Feedback Hub, who are having a lot of problems. And some of these problems we knew about, like the Intel SSD problem, we knew that. I think Alienware, we had heard about that. Chrome, some people having issues with Chrome. Microphones, speakers.
Wow.
But it seems like every day there's new and more things.
Yeah. This is like anything else. Remember a year ago or whenever it was, we were talking about Surface reliability, and it was the same thing. You'd hear from people say, you guys keep complaining about Surface Book and Surface Pro, you know, the new Surface Pro, Surface Pro 4, sorry. And they had that device. They have no problems at all. And that's the problem with this kind of thing. Your positive experience doesn't negate the fact that lots and lots of people are having negative experiences. And that's what we're hearing on this one. So, you know, 3 weeks ago, I wrote an article that I don't time these things to do this, but every once in a while, Microsoft just wants to talk to me on the phone. And it's always about something like this, where it's like, you know, you wrote this thing and you know, you're kind of a dick. And what? No, I mean, it's I had gotten so much feedback that was negative about this release. And I had my own negative experiences. You may recall, I had two blue screens and a green screen. And I had my NUC over here, the Intel NUC, that got the update. I didn't force the update. And when I did that, it removed a USB device and Bluetooth from the computer. Mm. So I wrote something 3 weeks ago where I basically said, look, there's obviously a problem here. Now, there are problems and then there are problems, right? There was the problem that happened with 1803 before it was released that caused it to be delayed. And our theory is that they needed to get that thing patched because the problem would have presented itself during the upgrade process, which is a terrible experience. And then there are the problems that have kind of happened since, which, by the way, in some cases have caused blue screens. When people are doing the upgrade or when people are installing a cumulative update or just out doing whatever they're doing in the world. And so, I know Mary Jo has listed a variety of locations where people are describing these problems. I guess the way I would just summarize it, though, is to say this is a lot like what it was like when they released the anniversary update 2 years ago, and not a lot like what it was like when they released the last two updates, the feature updates.
Yeah.
So how
and
many?
And the problem is they you know, both, I think both Paul and I have tried to ask if there's anything they want to say or any particular thing they'd like
you'd
to talk
like
about.
To say?
Yeah, what would you guys like to say about this? And all they'll say is things are going great. And I'm kind of like, okay, well, obviously they're not, you know.
So in the conversation I had, I was told that this update is no more or less reliable or whatever than the previous updates. And I said, look, I mean, I can add that to the article that I referenced from 3 weeks ago now, and they thought that that would be kind of pointless because it's already been pushed off the front page, whatever. And I said, if you guys want to throw together some stats that explain that this thing is better, I'm happy to write an article. And they said they'd get back to me. But there's a weird combination of things happening here. We saw an escalation in the speed at which updates were put out into the world over the last two feature updates. But it coincided with an escalation, I guess, in the quality of the updates, right? That there were fewer problems. And it kind of justified the speeding up of the deployment. And we know with the last release, it reached north of 90% of PCs out in the world. And that's at Windows 10 PCs. That's, you know, really impressive. I feel like they might have crossed the threshold here with this one because – threshold, of course, being a Windows 10 codename. Because I think if anything, they're moving even more quickly. This notion of seekers, like Leo literally said the word seekers, this is entered into the lexicon, you know.
Yeah.
This notion that when you go and look at Windows Update, it will then give it to you, that's brand new. This is not something they ever did before. And I feel like in the case of my NUC is a great example of this, where I didn't force that update, but it came anyway. That should never have arrived on that device because it breaks it. And I tested it with multiple installs. I did it over and over again. Different product editions of Windows 10. I went back to the previous version. Everything's fine. I thought there was a hardware problem. The problem is 1803.
Huh. Now, how many people do you think are using or have upgraded to 1803? Man, I'm just trying.
I know.
So one thing I think Microsoft could benefit by is giving out some data, saying something
we
like
agree.
One, you know, there've been this many installs, 0.1% have had problems.
We are days away from getting some information on that because AdDuplex does this every month. They do it at the end of the month. And this will be the first month we'll be able to see what percentage of Windows 10 PCs out in the wild have this update. We'll be able to compare that figure to the previous updates because we have that data. And we shall see. I think Mary Jo probably would agree with this based, again, on the things that people have told us. It just feels like – and I should say just based on what I've seen with my own computers – this thing has been deployed more quickly, I guess I would say more aggressively, than any previous Windows 10 update, feature update. I think. That's my opinion.
Which would indicate, even with the... See, this is the thing. I think we live in an era, thanks to Twitter, where every problem is magnified.
That's
for sure.
So if a small fraction of people have a problem, let's say it's one in 1,000. Let's say 1 in 1,000, and you install... Yeah. A million copies, which I'm sure they've done many more. That's 1,000 complaints. Now, 1,000 complaints on Twitter sounds like a big, loud noise, but it's 1 in 1,000.
So I'm not basing this necessarily on Twitter, right? So I think it's like a fitness device, right? It may or may not be accurate, but you kind of hope it's accurate to itself, so that if I get 500 steps today and 1,000 tomorrow, I should have walked double, regardless of how accurate that is. The type of feedback that I receive, and I think Mary Jo does, but in Twitter, sure, but on email mostly, on my comments on the website, I think is representative of, A, what you said, there are going to be more complaints than not complaints. But because we're part of kind of a Windows enthusiast community, we also hear from those people who say, you know, actually, I installed this on 5 different computers. Everything went great. We get detailed reports from people I know, because sometimes those emails go to both of us. People are very willing to provide us with feedback. And so I guess if I can assume that the type of feedback that I get is roughly consistent over each of these releases, what I'm saying is the percentage of problem reports is much greater with this version than it was with the past two. It very much reminds me of 1607, the anniversary update.
Mm-hmm. Well... Okay, I don't know how I got in this position of defending Microsoft, but I... all in.
Go for it, Leo.
Going all in. If they're rolling it out faster, that means more people have it in a shorter period of time than ever before. That could mean more problems, but it could also mean a higher percentage of reports, you know, than you're used to. It's a problem. This thing sucks.
Well,
everybody should stop.
No.
I think your point on that is right, though, because here's an example of this, right? 2 days ago... A guy working at Computer Seller, which is a computer repair firm, he posted on Reddit that, hey, I'm having people install this update and they're getting black screens, no icons. This is the first report of that, but that just happened 2 days ago, which kind of goes with your theory that as more people are getting it, there's more things that people are noticing. And he thinks it might be due to a conflict with the antivirus software from Avast on there.
Avast,
he doesn't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
So,
the answer to all this does come from Microsoft, which is merely say what percentage of people are having trouble. That's the only number that would be valid.
First of all, I believe that it is being rolled out more quickly because that's been what's happened with each of the last three updates. They had a real, reliability problem, I guess we call it, back in the anniversary update. They think they got on top of it. They kind of proved it over the past two releases. The thing is, the release before this, I don't want to say there were no complaints, but there were no complaints. I never saw anything like this. So if you want to take take 3 or 4 weeks of complaints and put them out over 6 months and compare it to the last release, they're not comparable. So, it may be more compressed, but there are just more.
It does. I am looking at a Reddit thread on the Windows 10 subreddit that attributes it to Avast, which is a free and very widely installed antivirus.
Yeah. But I don't have Avast, and I've had unbelievable problems.
Okay.
By the way, I will also say that the kind of the capper to my Intel NUC story is that I wasn't sure what to do with that computer. I used it for the book. It's what I take screenshots with. And when this thing went down, I used a Bluetooth mouse, whatever. I can plug in a mouse. But this caused a little bit of a problem for me because I wasn't sure how to proceed. I needed to get going on Windows. So how do I fix this? And by the way, that thing was quietly fixed. That driver issue where there were two bangs in Device Manager and no Bluetooth, and I don't know what the USB device was, but... there was some update, you know, there were some number of post RTM cumulative updates or whatever it was. I have no idea. It wasn't from Intel. I don't run the software that Intel has for this thing on there. But that update was fixed over time. So when I install this thing fresh today, do a Windows update reboot, it's fine. I would never even know this happened, but it wasn't
that
like that
to me,
for
right.
3 weeks.
You're touching on something that I think is the bigger problem here, which is finding information out from Microsoft about these things.
That's
right?
Who really needs to tell us what's going on.
And right? And you know what? It's buried everywhere. Like sometimes you'll find them, like some random person in a support forum just saying, oh yeah, we just fixed that. But how would you ever even find that?
That's what's frustrating because they know, right? I mean, Microsoft has the telemetry. They know. Yeah. They know. By the way, I apologize. That's the same Reddit article you were referring to, Mary Jo. I read on.
It?
I see it's the computer seller
okay.
guy. Yeah. So I don't want to imply that everybody agrees it's Avast. It's this one guy. well, why doesn't Microsoft say? Is it painful?
Some problems.
Is it too painful for Microsoft to say? I mean, why don't they say?
My theory on why they won't say is, you know, what they're trying to do is get everyone to just accept Windows as a service and just accept that your PC is going to update all the time and you're always going to be getting patches and fixes. And if they call this out and say, you know what, you guys are right, this is not going well this time, people will be like, whoa, I don't want to apply the patches.
They can't do it. And by the way, as one of the bigger critics of this Windows as a service notion, which is nonsense for a legacy OS like this, but whatever, those last two feature updates, the deployment of them went incredibly smoothly, which flies right in the face of any complaint I might have about Windows as a service. I don't look at this as like some kind of a victory. I would like for this stuff to work. What I'm saying is the last two updates went great. This one has not. And they can kind of claim otherwise, although you'll notice they're not doing that publicly. It's just not. There's just too much information out there to suggest otherwise.
So,
if you get this thing, it should work.
So
that should be the bar.
Stipulated. So what should people do? Should they not update?
Well, they should switch to the Mac. I mean, I don't know anything else.
Linux, my friends, it's finally
time. I'm just waiting. Yeah. Like on the HP Spectre, that update may be on my machine, but I haven't applied it. And I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to keep waiting till this quiets down.
The problem with this is this seeker thing. I'm an enthusiast going bag, whatever, but I would go into Windows Update and just check on it compulsively, like an idiot.
That's because you're a seeker,
Paul. Do this in the Microsoft store.
Yeah.
You know, this is my thing. But in the past, what we could have said was like, look, don't go.
If you don't get
update.
It, you don't want it.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
When Microsoft offers it to you.
That's right.
It depends on where you are in time because you get a little dialogue and it will say something like, hey, we got a new update, blah, blah, whatever. And then from there, you can say, well, let's talk about this in 30 days. That might be a prudent approach. The notion that you go into Windows Update because you might have a driver update. You might have, if your Surface device, a firmware update, whatever it is. You should never, by looking for Windows updates, get a feature update. If at that point it prompted you, that would be fine. But it doesn't prompt you. It just installs it. And that is irresponsible behavior on the part of Microsoft. It should ask you. I just don't understand that. So I guess maybe what I would say is, if you have Windows 10 Pro, you can delay these updates, right? There's an interface for that. If you have Windows 10 Home, now we have to, it's like, to be careful with your computer. Don't touch anything. Mm-hmm. You know, you might
whatever
just get
you
this
do,
thing.
Don't check for updates.
Don't reboot the damn thing. You're screwed.
Yeah. Like, you gotta, I think you're right. I think that seeker thing was a mistake.
Yeah, I just don't understand it. It's just irresponsible.
So we should explain, because this was a few episodes ago, that apparently if you look to see if there's an update to Windows 10, the next time you go there, Microsoft will say, yes, there is. It's a signal to them that you want it.
It is.
But that's not what that is. That's not what going to Windows Update is.
It shouldn't
is.
Be. Paul and I
just
agree.
Intel just released we have this latest, some, you know, this new Spectre stuff happening. Oh, well, I should see if my PC maker has provided any update. You know, bump, no, you get a new version of Windows 10. What? what is that? I mean, that's crazy. It should ask.
And in hindsight, they may realize it was a mistake because they're clearly providing it to people who shouldn't get it yet, right?
Right.
Leo, the company line is that this thing is going just great, and I don't know what these two idiots are talking about.
But you know
what
I think
in the chat room. Here's a guy in the chat room, the Belgian. not his
I like him already.
The Belgian guy. 1803 broke six Intel NUC 7 and 6 and 7 PCs at one of our clients. Had to drive over there and do a BIOS flash to get them running again.
Yeah.
That's
And then here's another person, Tom Byrne. Sorry, Tom. No problem with 1803. I updated five machines and everything went just fine.
There you go,
here's another guy who said
You know,
we could do that all day, right?
We could.
But here's another guy.
That's the problem with this is, you know, quintessential anecdotal evidence.
It is.
That's why I want numbers.
Well,
we do too.
Again, we have, you know, what did they call it? I just already forgot the term. You know, it's like when the United States security, they have like noise, a chatter they hear, you know, and I look at this like chatter.
Chatter.
What I'm saying
is the chatter. The terrorists the chatter, don't like 1803.
Right. No, I mean, the chatter is email feedback, comments, Twitter, and the web, you know, because you see articles on the web about this as well. All I'm saying, it's not completely anecdotal. It's not like I walked down a plane and said, wow, there are a lot of people using Macs. Macs must have 90% usage share.
That's completely anecdotal.
That's anecdotal.
Yeah.
This is not exactly anecdotal. It's not hard data. I know that. But like I said, I Mary Jo, I know, get a lot of feedback from people from a lot of different avenues. And it is absolutely a fact that this one has been far more negative and voluminous than the last two versions. No doubt about it.
But you know why I think they did the seeker thing this time? I think they were basing it on the fact that the last two went really well and it rolled out quickly and it's rolling out even quicker than we thought. And hey, guess what? You know what? We should do the seeker thing and make it roll out even more quickly.
But
I don't think they counted on the issue that happened. Right. So whatever that mysterious issue is.
That theory's fine. I like that. In other words, we're getting better at this. I mean, we can afford to do this. But that hangs on two things. One, you're not going to send this thing to computers where it's not going to work. That should be look at my NUC and know that this isn't going to work, and that should never happen. If you don't have that level of certainty, why are you sending it to this computer? And two, it has to be a choice. You have to say, do you want to install this right now?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I just – it's terrible that they're doing that to people.
Okay.
Agree. Especially because the installation can take like an hour, right? I mean, it still isn't that fast.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing they did do. Wait, do you do this? Do you get this right away? Or does this. I can't remember if you need to have this installed first, but they're changing the install process so that more of it happens offline, online, I should say. So the amount of time you have to spend offline, meaning the computer's rebooting, is less. The total amount of time, by the way, I think has actually gone up. It seems like the process is actually taking a very long time. If you're sitting there waiting for it, like I often do, and it's when I play Call of Duty, but the most of it happens when the computer can be used, you know, it's interactive.
Mm-hmm. Right. Which is good, but yeah.
Yeah, it is good.
Well, okay.
it's going to be interesting to watch, right? Next couple of weeks are going to be really interesting to watch because even more people are going to get it. And are things going to be fixed or are more things going to crop up? That's going to be good to watch.
Right.
Yeah. So I think sometime in the next 7 days, we'll get an ad duplex report. I'm very interested in this one. And I know Alan over there and everyone who looks at this data will be looking to compare this first month with, you know, the previous releases. And we'll see. See what happens.
Okay. Is there advice? I mean, is there any prophylactic measure somebody could take to, uninstall Avast? I mean, what do we don't know enough. Right. We don't know enough, I guess, about what's causing this.
I wonder if the Avast thing is. Oh no, that's an RS5. So I have a hard time.
That's RS5. I know what you're thinking about. Yep.
What's what in each version? Microsoft is moving to a model with AV software. It has to be what? That's like it can't do any of these secret.
I'm not a fan of AV software these days,
No, I'm not either.
We see problems like this. This is not unusual. Wouldn't surprise me if that were a problem. Okay, well, and so what, should you defer it? I mean, what is there any advice?
If you can, I mean, the problem is you can't on Windows 10 Home. So the workaround there is to put your network or configure your network as a metered network, and it won't download feature updates on that network. The problem is it also won't update most quality updates, which are security updates, unless it's really critical, in which case it will.
Yeah,
but that's a garbage workaround. Like, what a terrible thing to tell people to do. This is, I don't know. I'm just going to compare it to like putting liquid in a diesel car to prevent it from polluting the environment. But it's like, it's such a goofy thing to have human beings do to a device that should be sophisticated and just work. And, you know, we've complained about the Windows Home situation a lot. I disagree with that fundamentally. No. You should have a chance to say no.
What if you say, whatever you do, don't check for updates?
Yeah.
I never check for updates. Normal people don't go check for updates.
Wait, what does that mean? I check for updates all the time.
You're not normal.
You're not normal. You're like the least normal person I know.
No, I'm with you, Paul. And I think most enthusiasts check for updates. See, part of the problem is updates don't necessarily always get applied right away. So, and you want critical updates. So I don't think it's, I think it's not an unusual behavior to check for updates. If you don't check for updates, will you not get 1803 until Microsoft deems you ready or what?
So
I think so, right?
Do we know?
Sort of. The thing is, that install will trigger in the background at some point, right?
Yeah.
It's going to vary on the computer and where we are in the scheme of things. And of course, they have a way of opening the sieve a little bit more as time goes by. And so non-seekers will just be getting this automatically at some point. At least you'll be prompted, right, in those cases. Right. But the issue I have is, well, I have many issues, but one of the issues is Patch Tuesday is coming up again, right? So if you haven't gotten this thing, Patch Tuesday is going to happen. Patch Tuesday might have some major fix for an exploit that is whatever, and you're going to want that thing. And you might hear, you know, we might be talking on the podcast in 2 weeks and say, hey, by the way, you're going to want to install these updates. The problem is if you go and install those updates, you're going to get 1803 maybe.
Right.
And probably, really. It's a kind of astonishing to me how many PCs are getting this. Like I have a lot of test computers here, and I don't think I have one that wasn't offered it when I went to Windows Update. That never has happened before with any previous feature update. It really is unique. So, I mean, the device is kind of tough. I mean, you might be dealing with this thing. The good news is, this is not very good news, but it seems like the blue screen stuff that does happen, whether it's on the upgrade or whatever, is not typically fatal. Like, you can recover from it. In other words, if you just reboot the computer, it kind of starts over, whatever it does, it will work. It will come up. And what a measure of reliability to fall back on. Is like, you know, you might hit a tree, but the car will drive fine.
That's what happened on the Envy for me, right? I got the blue screen and I was like, oh, what is it doing now? I think it's applying a cumulative update on top of 1803. Mm-hmm. And then I just sat there and I didn't do anything. And then it just fixed itself. Like, I didn't take any action. It just,
I just got a Lenovo Flex 6, which is a 14-inch consumer convertible computer. And it is the first computer I've received for review that has 1803 on it from the get-go. It comes up with 1803, and it works fine. So maybe the other option would be buy a brand new computer and save the industry. So come on, people, let's go.
There you go. There's a solution.
Well, actually, that's not much of a solution since most of them probably come with the previous version.
All right. I think my advice, which I've been, when people are asking me, I'm like, you know what? There's really no gigantic features in 1803 that you can't live without. So.
Well, except for that Fluent thing, which is awesome.
Yeah, that Fluent thing. If you really need to have Fluent, sorry, you can take your chances. But if you're okay with missing on Fluent and a couple other more minor features, you could just wait. And hopefully Microsoft will be ironing this out and OEMs will be ironing out the driver problems. Because I've got a guy here who's pinging me right now. Who's like, yeah, it's a driver issue for me. And I can't repeat most of the language in the thing he just sent me, but.
So he's not in the pro column then.
He's not happy about what happened. Let's just say.
By the way, I am positive they will iron this out. Like I said, the Intel NUC thing that I was experiencing there has silently fixed itself. You know, that's neat. I guess I'd like to know what happened there, but I'm happy that it works. Yeah.
Okay, we can move on then.
I think we can.
I think we can move on. Now you want to slam Edge? Is that next?
No. I want to offer some constructive advice. And I also want to kind of think about why things are the way they are, you know, because tied to every major Windows 10 release, every feature update, there's a major update to Edge. In fact, it's the only time the browser is updated.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so there's some confusion over whether this thing is a store app, if it's kind of a hybrid store app, if it's a system component that's deeply integrated into the operating system, you know, whatever it is. Way back in 2016, I think it was, Microsoft said that over time they would take Edge and put it into the store so that it could be updated on a more regular basis, which I think we could all agree it kind of needs. It's just still functionally not up to date with other browsers. That's never happened. And actually, since then, they told me they now don't plan on doing that. So what's the deal? Unfortunately, this is somewhat tied to what Mary Jo is going to talk about at the end of the book. But I think there's an architectural thing that happened in Windows 10 that was predicated on this notion of Windows 10 everywhere, which is not what they called it. But this notion that Windows 10 was a platform that would run on all these different devices. And it was going to be PCs and phones, consoles like Xbox, embedded devices, tablets, you know, the whole range of devices. And really what's happened now, 700 million devices in, is that 650 million-ish of them out in the world, or maybe more, are PC. They're just PCs. So Windows 10 has become a PC operating system. And yes, variants of it are used in HoloLens and Surface Hub and other kind of niche devices, but really it's for PCs. And the notion of putting Edge in the operating system, like they did with IE before it, made some sense because it was this notion that we're going to write one version of it. We only have to do it once and it will just work everywhere. It's a good idea. But now they've written a version of the browser that can only work in Windows 10 for PCs, and it's actually not that good of an idea. And what's interesting is because Microsoft's mobile platform failed, they brought Edge to mobile, to Android and iOS. And they did it in a way that I think makes tons of sense. They have this kind of user interface shell that is an application that sits on top of the rendering engine, the browser rendering engine that's inherent to the platform, Safari on iOS and Chrome on Android. That's what they should do on Windows 10. It should be the same thing. And that would allow them to update the interface, the user interface, at a pace that was much faster and would benefit end users than the core rendering engine, which is part of Windows 10, by the way. It's kind of the way they're architecting Windows going forward when you think about it. The core part of the OS is with the Azure group, and the user experiences, as they call them, are with Joe's group or whatever that group is that used to be part of Windows and Devices, whatever the Terry Myerson organization was. And I feel like there are people who want to use this thing, but it's just not as good as Chrome or Firefox or whatever other mainstream browsers. And this is the re-architecting this thing is what would make sense. And so even though back in the day we would say, well, why isn't it just a store app? I think now the case for making it a store app is better than ever, because Edge as a, integrated system component hasn't necessarily made a lot of sense.
If it's a store app, it gets updated more?
Yeah,
a store app could be updated every single day.
Yeah.
It's just
one of your best rants.
Nice.
I really like this one when I read it.
No, I agree. No. I think he's exactly right on.
I think you're so right. Yeah. I do. Because
it's a weird thing to say.
I know. I don't say you're right that often, but.
No, I didn't mean you saying I was right. I mean,
that is a weird thing to say. No, I agree.
That's an awesome thing to say.
No, I think the whole thought about what is an operating system is changing a lot at Microsoft right now, and what needs to be part of an operating system. You know, this whole thing of the browser has to be in the OS, that goes way back to the antitrust trial, right? Like that's when that notion really got cemented into Windows. And now it doesn't have to be part of it, I don't think. I mean, everybody agrees a browser is a key component of an OS experience, but it doesn't need to be in the OS.
There are.
It's this misunderstanding of the way things are. You know, at the time when Windows 10 was conceived, I think there was still this vestigial feeling that, you know, this is what makes this a platform. Like, we have to do it this way.
Well,
you know, like we're going to make this thing.
You can make an argument that the rendering engine that's in Edge is used widely throughout the OS.
That has to be part of the OS.
So that's part of the OS. I mean, and, you know.
That's how you split it. The rendering engine, which is important for PWAs and for any app that
PDFs
puts up
a web I mean, that's the best thing in the world. You don't have to install that crappy Acrobat Reader because Edge will open PDFs.
Well, I mean, but the rendering engine stuff, I think twice a year is okay for that. But the UI stuff, that should be arbitrary.
I don't know, if that's true. I think there's a lot of security flaws in browsers are in the rendering engine. I think that's
well, security flaws they can fix. What I mean is major functional
feature updates.
To the,
Yeah.
Twice a year is okay.
Right. Yeah.
I think the confusion there is they're both called Edge, right? Like the rendering engine is called Edge HTML and the browser is called Edge. So people just think of this as one like finite thing, but it doesn't have to be, right?
I don't have to think. It doesn't matter how people think of it. I mean, this would allow them to update Edge on Windows 10 in lockstep with Edge on Android and iOS. As those things kind of converge functionally, because actually Edge on mobile has gotten really good. It's catching up to the kind of feature set we see on the PC. When there come when it's time for some major new feature in Edge, why can't it just come in July? Why does it have to wait for September, October?
Yeah,
and then you have to wait on mobile as well. You want to do those things all at the same time.
You know, it's funny because on the Envy, I use Edge for obvious reasons. And, you know, it's fine. It's actually pretty usable. I think we're rapidly getting to a time when Edge will be the best browser on Windows. Is that possible?
Rapidly, I don't know, but maybe. I you know, saying that Edge is fine is like I rented a Toyota Corolla and it was okay.
Well, no, I just mean I don't miss Chrome. No. I guess what I'm saying is I don't miss Chrome.
I wasn't scared that I was going
to die. I thought I was going to be in your camp, Leo, but on the Envy, I have to say Edge for me is just not very good.
What is it that you don't like?
It doesn't perform well.
Oh.
And I need to go have this reset back to 10S and retry this.
I think you should
this.
Never have taken Paul's
leavings. Well, I didn't take it.
Leavings.
Paul hates us.
Guys.
You hate it.
Paul screwed your Envy up. This is a nice little device. There's nothing wrong
with it. I'm getting a replacement one, actually, to try against this one. So,
Yeah, you could just wipe it and start it. It wouldn't be a bad thing.
like I put like a utility in the system that runs in the background. Performance is even worse.
Yeah,
it is.
I wouldn't put it past you, sir. I wouldn't.
Yep.
I wouldn't.
Yep.
No, I don't know. I mean, of course, that will really vary with people's use of Chrome because I don't use all the Chrome extensions. I'm basically using a couple of extensions, LastPass, which is a sponsor, uBlock Origin for ad blocking, and that's pretty much it. Then the other reason
TweetDeck.
Yeah, TweetDeck.
TweetDeck on Edge has just been horrible for
me.
Absolutely horrible.
You should try the Twitter app, you know, which is a PWA and see what that looks like.
I hate that app.
In theory, TweetDeck is a Twitter app.
But just see what the performance is like, right? I know. I realize it may not be exactly the functionality you're looking for. And by the way, it is my app pick of the week. But I'd be interested because that is running on Edge HTML, right? It's kind of a pseudo-native app. It has native-ish features and all that stuff. I mean, the performance on that should be...
Is that your issue, is the performance, Mary Jo?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm just going to set it up right now. I'm doing it right now just to see.
I just couldn't believe it. At first, I was like, wait, is this because it's running on ARM? Like, that shouldn't matter, right?
Well, the performance is not great on a lot of things on this ARM. I mean, is it rendering or just the scrolling or...
It's the rendering. So, like, when I close my browser... And then I reopen it. It's like watching paint dry to see TweetDeck repopulate.
Yeah.
By the way,
I do see that.
If Edge was a full store app, that would be the optimal performance that would be possible with that app, right? Right now, it's not 100% clear what this thing is because it's some kind of weird combination of a, I don't know, whatever it is, some.
Yeah.
But once it's open, looking at it, it scrolls fine. It seems like
once it's open, it's good.
So it's just the setup, the initial drawing of the I see
and
that.
And then sometimes it's just so slow. Like I can see tweets like slowly like almost like painting in. I'm like, what is going on with TweetDeck?
Yeah. Huh. It's tough.
I'm actually not seeing that on it was maybe slow when it was initially drawing, but I'm wondering if
Yes, I get it. It's Paul.
I think Paul's screwed up. it feels pretty snappy.
Because otherwise, I could use Edge. Like, I don't use a lot of extensions in Chrome either. I prefer how Chrome works. I just find it more intuitive. I don't know why, but I could use Edge if it didn't go so horribly with TweetDeck, which is one of the main things
That's your number one tool, huh?
It's not Notepad, but you know,
it ain't no Notepad.
No, it's the opposite of Notepad in many ways. I've been updating the book for the Edge chapter, which is 60 pages long. It's a lot of stuff. It's kind of interesting how much Edge has progressed over the years, because they really, they have added a bunch of stuff. And in the latest version in 1803, they've kind of consolidated the reading experiences across web, you know, like web articles, PDF, EPUB files, and then the eBooks you buy through the store. They're not 100% consistent between the three, but there are really cool features in there. You know, you can read articles aloud. There are grammar tools that help people who don't read well. If you're trying to learn how to read, if you have dyslexia or some other kind of reading disorder, there's actually stuff built into it that can help you with that. They can space out words into individual parts so that they're, you know, you can see it as it goes, and it's kind of a neat. It has all this stuff, but from my perspective, I'd almost like to see all that stripped out, or at least be modularized, where I could kind of go in and say, I'd like an even more basic experience. The UI in this thing could be a little heavy. If you look at the hub, which is where all this stuff is located now, favorites, reading list, your ebook library, I think history and downloads as well. It's this gigantic thing now. It takes up 2/3 of the browser window. It's huge. I kind of wish they could, I kind of wish it was pared down, if anything. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that wouldn't help it run faster on this kind of a computer. So, if you could say, look, I'm never going to group tabs. I'm never going to do this. Could I just not see that stuff?
You got to ask your colleague why. So Tweetin, which is TweetDeck, is in the store, but doesn't run on Windows S.
Is that true? That's
funny.
I wonder if it's a 64-bit.
Because Tweetin is, yeah, I just did it. Tweetin.
It's in the store, but it doesn't run on Windows 10.
Yeah. It says it will not run on S. See, Tweetin does not support Windows 10S, even though it's in the store.
But he's a jerk. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, talk to him, because you have a unique perspective on all this. Because this is TweetDeck, basically, right? And Mary Jo could use this.
Wait, scroll down a little bit. It's x64 required. So I don't know that it's Windows 10S. I think it's x64.
Well, it says Tweetin does not support Windows 10S, but you're right. It wouldn't also work on this anyway.
So it doesn't work twice.
Doesn't work twice. Twice is incompatible.
Yeah.
I will ask him. In fact, I'll ask him right now.
Yeah, I wonder why it has to. I presume he's using the Edge engine when he's doing TweetDeck. Isn't he using the Edge engine to render? He must be. Well, maybe not. Maybe that's why. I don't know. Maybe that's why it won't work on S. I don't know. Inquiring minds wish to know. Fortunately, the reason we say Paul has an inside track is the guy works.
I grade him daily
at Therot.com.
Mahedi.
Mahedi. That's his name. I'm sorry, Mahedi. I forgot your name.
Yep.
Chris, we didn't even know he was Mr. Tweetin.
That was funny. A lot of people didn't know that. And then they're like, wait, is that the Tweetin guy?
Yeah, he's very quiet about it. You know, he kind of mentioned to me one day recently, he said, hey, I just updated, you know, Tweetin. You know, I was like, wait.
Is it just him? Or is there? Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's just him.
That's great. It's very nice. Really well done. And would be a suitable replacement for TweetDeck if it worked on the X2. But it does not.
That's good.
There's a new SDK, isn't there now, for compiling 64-bit apps for ARM?
Yep.
Didn't that come out of build?
Cool. Yep.
That's true.
Maybe
it's not generally available, but it's in preview or whatever. So yes, you could. You could absolutely. That's true. Yep. That should do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Should.
Maybe. Who knows? You know, there's all sorts of things that could get in the way. You might not use
the like his hatred of Windows 10S.
He might hate Windows 10S. He might have inherited that from you. HoloLens devices getting in the April. This is exciting. Now you can have a blue screen and a mixed reality. Getting the 2018 update.
Yep. So if you have a HoloLens and you're a seeker, you can go get the April update now. And if you don't want to be a seeker and you want to just wait for it, which sounds like a better plan, because then all your data won't be wiped out, which is a warning if you get it now, you'll be getting it over the coming weeks. So this is interesting because HoloLens hasn't gotten a Windows 10 feature update since 2016. This is the first time since then that they've applied one of these twice yearly feature updates to the HoloLens. And there's a whole bunch of new developer features and a couple other features that I thought were very interesting. There's some new management capabilities in this release for HoloLens that are very business-oriented. They are meant for people who want to use mobile device management systems like Windows Intune. Sorry, just plain old Intune, not Windows Intune. Intune to manage their devices. So if you actually have more than one HoloLens and you wanted to set it up to do things like automatic deployment and provisioning, you could do that now with this release. And Microsoft, when they were announcing this, also talked about some of the other business capabilities. It was very interesting to see their posts. They were really playing up the business angle for the HoloLens. They were giving a shout out to a number of their business partners or who are in like construction and maintenance and repair and IoT and saying, look at all the cool things they're doing with the HoloLens. I like this because I think this is where the HoloLens is going to catch on first, which is in business. It's where it's going to make Microsoft more money business. But for a while, it felt like they got off track and they were really just talking about 3D as a creator's thing and got really all caught up in the paint 3D stuff. And we're kind of veering off course with what this thing is. So it's nice to see them going back to where they should be. The other thing that happened this week is they released those two new Microsoft developed apps for the HoloLens that they showed at Build. One of those is called Layout, which is for designing layouts, like workspace layouts in 3D. And the other is called Remote Assist, which is a hands-free video calling app. They're both in private, I think they call it, no, limited public preview right now. So if you do have a HoloLens, you might want to go try those out, get them from the store, free downloads.
So, nice. Yeah. Nice.
We'll see if anybody complains about problems with this, with the HoloLens. In the documentation, there's a lot of, you should go look at the documentation for the HoloLens release of the April 2018 update, because there's a lot of caveats in there. I saw one that said things could look a little blurrier. You could even have a smaller field of view.
Oh. Could they, though?
Oh.
Could
they?
I'm like, oh, no, oh. Really?
That's weird.
I know.
That's not an upgrade.
Weird. Hopefully something they can fix. Yeah, something they can be fixed. Yeah.
And I want to defer on this Spectre thing because we talked a little bit about it yesterday and I want to know what you guys think. It's, of course, the seventh variant or something like that. No, fourth generation variant, right? Of Spectre. Yeah. There are more to come, apparently. And yesterday we finally got details on that in Microsoft's response as well. We're going to take a little break and come back with more Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley all about Windows. Everything you'd ever want to know about Microsoft. On Windows Weekly, our show today brought to you by those very, very nice folks at Rocket Mortgage, who saw an opportunity and grasped the brass ring. They realized, Rocket Mortgage was created by Quicken Loans, so they knew a little bit about the home loan business, number one mortgage lender in the United States, number one not just in volume but in customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power, for year after year after year. And they looked at this whole process and they said, this is kind of antiquated, kind of stuck in the 19th century, you know, almost Dickensian. You have to go to a bank and say, please, sir, can I have some money to buy a home? And the guy gives you a big stack of paper that says, all right, sure, fill out this application and then go to the attic and look for your pay stubs and your bank statements and we'll get back to you in a few weeks. It's crazy. It was really crazy. And I know firsthand because that's exactly the experience we had when Lisa and I bought our house. That was a few years ago. Now, this time, it's going to be Rocket Mortgage. So Quicken Loans created an entirely online mortgage approval process that just takes minutes. No going to the bank. No big, long application. You just answer a few simple questions in the Rocket Mortgage interface. You can do it right now. You can do it on your phone. You can do it in an open house. Go to rocketmortgage.com/windows, rocketmortgage.com. You bookmark that, rocketmortgage.com/windows, or even go and set up the account. That'll make it even faster. Then when you see a house you want, you say, all right, I want a loan. They ask for permission to access all the information they need. They see that you don't have to go to the attic. They have relationships with all the financial institutions. You just say, yeah, yeah, get the information you need. They crunch the numbers, and based on your income, your assets, and your credit, they'll show you the loans you qualify for. You choose the term, you choose the rate, you choose the down payment, and you're done. And that took less than 10 minutes in most cases. Rocket Mortgage. Plus, you'll know every step of the way what's going on. It's going to happen. You apply simply. You understand fully. You mortgage confidently. That's it in a nutshell. By the way, tip of the hat to Rocket Mortgage's CEO. His Cleveland Cavaliers are in Game 5 of the NBA playoffs. I know Dan will be sitting in the front row down there rooting for his team. They're really great. Dan Gilbert is very techno-savvy. And I really think that this is a way for them to say, look, technology can do it better and faster and give you more information about what's going on every step of the way. So there's none of this mysterious, you know, in the back room, well, let's see what we can do for you. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Go to rocketmortgage.com/windows. Equal housing lender. They're licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And I'm actually rooting for the Cavaliers because I want our Warriors to meet the Cavaliers once again in the playoffs. Although I know, Paul, you probably have a soft spot for the Celtics, so I'll let you root for your boys in green. Rocketmortgage.com/windows.
Regarding basketball, I would just say that the Celtics have no business being in the Eastern Conference Finals, and that whoever wins that game is going to be destroyed by whoever wins in the West. I stayed up last night to watch that game.
Wasn't that exciting? I mean, we lost, but...
Yeah, I mean, that's a basketball game right there. Yeah. I mean, yeah. The thing I really like about Golden State is just there's some flash, obviously.
There's a little
2000. No, but I mean, but there's some solid fundamental basketball occurring there.
They're a great team. It's really fun. Yeah. I've been, you know, a fan since through the worst times of all. I mean, they were the worst team for a long, long time.
I didn't even realize they were in the NBA until about 2 years ago. But
but you know what happened? I don't know if people know this, but they were purchased by a consortium of Silicon Valley guys, some of whom I know. And they put together, I don't know, there's 30 owners or something, some big number. Sure. And they really they said, we're going to do, you know, the Billy Beane thing. We're going to do do it right, do it smart. And they did. And I think they put together a great team. And they put the money
into it. Yeah, no, this is a model to follow. Yep. The big three, the team they have is a lot like the big three from Miami the Celtics or from the Bulls days of Scottie Pippen and whatever that guy's
They're
name
legendary.
Is. And
whatever that guy, that other MJ guy, whatever.
You know, the Larry Bird, Kevin McHale, Robert Parrish days of the 80s or the Lakers of the 80s.
No, it's really fun to watch. I know it won't last forever, but it's fun to watch. And it's kind of, it's just to see the Cavs and the Warriors together. It's just fun, you know.
It's weird how these two kind of mid-market teams have become like powerhouses in the NBA. It's very strange.
Well, and that's why I kind of mentioned this, you know, the Dan Gilbert connection, because I think that there is something to say about smart ownership, right?
Something. Are you kidding me? It's everything.
It's everything.
This is the success that the Patriots and the Red Sox have had in Boston is entirely because of smart ownership. It's everything.
And I look at the 49ers and I think...
Mm-hmm. I look at the Clippers for the past 30 years.
I think Steve Ballmer is smart, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Although.
We'll see.
I think he's smart.
He's loud.
He knows. I'll tell you what. He knows every single pair of shoes.
But you watch Chris Paul out there and you think, you know, if this goes south, it's going to be because of that little trade.
Well, I didn't know you were so into hoops, Paul. That's awesome.
Sure.
Of course he is. So Spectre, let's talk about this. So. We had the original Spectre problem and meltdown. Meltdown was patched in browsers pretty quickly, including Edge and Internet Explorer and Safari and Chrome and Firefox. Mm-hmm. Intel and Microsoft are saying now that those mitigations will help with this new fourth generation version of Spectre. But there are firmware patches, and even Microsoft and Intel are saying 2% to 8% slowdown in performance because of these patches.
There is an asterisk there, and the asterisk is good news for a change, which is when these updates are deployed to users, and that will happen via firmware updates from PC makers. There'll be a software component that Microsoft puts out in Windows Update. The enabling of that switch that causes that slowdown will be disabled by default. And apparently, I don't know how they're going to do this exactly, but it's something that you as a user are going to be able to enable yourself. According to Intel, new PCs going forward will ship with this software, obviously, but it will also be disabled by default. And the reason is that the potential threat is actually very low in this case compared to the previous Spectre Meltdown variants. So they feel pretty good that it's probably not going to be an issue, but we want to make sure we fix it. And if something happens, you can flip it on yourself as a user. I don't know what that's going to look like, but it won't be enabled by default. So that's good.
The disclosure was good, too, unlike the beginning of Spectre and Meltdown.
Well, but there are, we think, many more, not many, but a few more variants that they haven't talked about. But you can't disclose until everybody has had a chance to patch.
Well, unless you're Google. I would say that Spectre and Meltdown are going to be the gift that keeps on giving, right?
Yes.
In addition to these new variants like we're seeing this week, I feel like we're also going to see improvements in the mitigations and improvements in the fixes that they put into the firmware and et cetera. So for people with existing computers, I think you're going to see further firmware updates coming, you know, over the months. Like there'll be more updates because they're going to get a better handle on how to fix this and how to do it more efficiently. And then, of course, there's going to be future chipsets where this will be mitigated further at the chipset level. So it's just we're going to be dealing with this. It's going to be a thing. I don't think this goes away.
Yeah, because of speculative execution. And by the way, it's not just Intel. Every processor has the problem.
Speculative execution is what we call it when Windows Update gives you a new version of Windows 10 even though you didn't want it.
Just gonna take a chance. Let's just take a chance here and see if you like it.
Yeah.
Take a chance. So who is Xiao Ice? What is Xiao Ice? I never heard of Xiao Ice.
I know. And you know, it's funny. When Microsoft announced Xiao Ice, which is one of their chatbots that is in China only in 2014, I remember reading about it and hearing about it. And then I haven't heard anything pretty much since 2014 until this week. Because this week, Satya Nadella was in London giving an AI talk. And most of the talk from people who were there was a recap of what they said at Build about AI. But then they did a demo there that they did not do at Build, which was Xiao Ice making a phone call.
Oh, man.
And you know why they did this, of course.
Yes.
Because Google did this at I/O with Google Assistant and the whole full duplex thing that wowed everyone. But Microsoft didn't do this demo at Build. They just did it at this London event. And it's not exactly like what Google showed from what people were saying. Tom Warren from The Verge was there and he said, you know, it wasn't like Xiao Ice called a hair salon and they didn't know it was a robot. In fact, Microsoft tells people when it does make a call that this is a bot. They make sure to identify that.
Google will too.
Yeah, everybody will. Should I play this?
Yeah.
Do you want to hear
it? Yeah, definitely.
All right.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's an old ringtone. It's in Chinese.
This is Klingon. They put it in Chinese so no one can tell what it is. It's going to be saying anything.
This is Xiao Ice. Are you feeling less stressed now? I was worried about you. I'm feeling much better. Thanks for talking with me about work earlier. Good. It's already 12:20 a.m. and you need to get some sleep. Wow. It does. I mean, I speak a little Chinese, but it does sound like a human voice.
Yeah.
It's a little uncanny that it's, you know, showing concern like that is a little weird.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, the weirdest part about that conversation is the chatbot doesn't shut up and the human being just says these simple, okay. You know, it's like really like it's goofier. The person seems more robotic, you know, than the robot.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know if I want a robot calling and saying, hey, I'm worried about you.
I know.
That's creepy.
Although yeah,
now
in
that
China,
a robot has called me, I would be worried too.
Yeah.
Now in China, this thing, Xiaoice, is seen very differently from how we see chatbots here. It's seen as like a friend, a personal friend to people. It
apparently
sings lullabies to kids. It announces things on the news. It's a good player in a whole bunch of different games. It's just a whole different kind of a bot and a whole different experience than what we here think of as bots.
Microsoft says it's made 1 million calls.
I know.
That's amazing.
Right?
Man, if only they had had some kind of a forum where they could have talked about this before Google did their little AI thing, you know? It's weird to me that they blew that opportunity, really, other than the fact that they have a history of blowing those kinds of opportunities.
Yeah. But, you know, Google took a lot of heat, and maybe in a way Microsoft's saying, we dodged that bullet.
Yeah,
you
know, maybe.
Right? No, I'm sorry, but out in the real world, that was huge news.
I thought
and
so.
I know that because so many normal people asked me if I had seen it. Not because I write about tech, but because it was awesome.
It was on all the local news shows. I did it on the radio show. I mean, everybody was talking about it.
So I'm sure that, you know, there was this kind of undercurrent of, oh, did they fake it, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But that happened in the normal nerd circles. Like, out in the normal world, it was like, oh, my God, Google just took over the world.
Yeah.
You know,
that's true.
And that's something Microsoft should have been part of.
Yeah. You know, the other thing about Xiaoice is it's huge. Like I keep saying, there's 500 million plus users of this thing. It's just something we don't hear about here a lot.
Why don't we hear about this?
Because there are different variants that Microsoft is building of this kind of a chatbot for different markets. So the one for our market is that Zoe.ai. Have you ever seen that? Which is more like a teen bot, right?
Sure.
And so that has much less usage, a much smaller audience. I don't know what the figures are, but Microsoft did say to me when I asked about Zoe, they said that they're going to take this full duplex chat capability that they demoed with Xiaoice, and they're going to make it part of Zoe sometime very soon. So we're going to start seeing that here. But
oh, boy.
Is Zoe the one that went racist on us? Or
that was Tay.
Tay. Oh, sorry.
Tay. Yep.
You understand my confusion.
Tay was the brought bad out chat back pot. In shot. We don't talk about Tay anymore.
No.
Tay is tied to something in the cellar.
We had to put Tay down.
Sorry about that.
But Microsoft makes these different bots. Like there's one in India called Roo, R-U-U-H. In Japan, there's one called Rina. So they have different ones for different markets that have very different kind of personalities and focus.
Cultural sensitivity is paramount here.
Right.
I'm trying to imagine I'm watching TV at night and I'm talking to Zoe and my daughter walks in and says, who are you talking to? And I have to explain it to her that
she's
a teenage
hot.
Bot. It's fine.
I have a teenage girlfriend.
It's normal. Go to bed and everything's fine.
She's a bot.
Yeah, my daughter would like get in the car and drive away. That'd be the end of it. I would never see her again.
Dad, why do you keep saying yes, queen? Why? Tell me why. What's wrong with you, father?
Yes. So I also asked them, you know, I said, I'm getting confused. Like, what's the difference between Cortana and all these chatbots, right? And there really isn't a clear answer to that. They just said, our social AI chatbots like Xiaoice and Zoe are designed for social conversation and entertainment. But Cortana's more a truly personal digital assistant. But they are starting to do a lot of the same things, which is interesting.
It seems like, if anything, this the Chinese bot, what's her name?
Xiaoice.
Xiaoice, which is kind of an awesome name, by the way. It seems like this bot has far more users than Cortana does, really. Like actual users.
Right. I would think so.
It seems like it.
Yeah.
But you don't use it the same way, or do you?
You don't. No, you don't really. So especially the way Cortana is evolving, right? That's just getting built into everything and becoming more a part of the experience that you have wherever you are, and it just is there to proactively assist you. These bots are more like conversational bots. You know, you ask a question, but, I mean, it responds.
How awesome is the data you get from the conversations, right? This is the thing that the Cortana type bots need, right? Mm-hmm. This is kind of the sophisticated part of it. Integrating with a back end service like a calendar, it should be really easy. But the understanding conversations and having – it's the duplex part, right? The back and forth. Right. It's not just question, answer, follow up. It's – we're just talking. I think that's the sophisticated thing.
Yeah, and that's going to come to Cortana too. They have said, but I don't know what the time frame is for that.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Whatever Cortana
is. So Xiaoyi's, we're not getting her in the U.S. That stays in China. But the whole intent of the demo was to show people, hey, you know, Google's not the only one who's done this. We can do it too.
Yeah. See,
doing it after the fact though is so
yeah. It's lame. The same thing as coming out with a Surface table after the iPad came out. Like, well, we got that too.
Well, here's the crazy part. No, look, they've done a million calls with Xiaoyi's. It's been able to do this for like over a year, right. But we just are nobody hearing more about it now, right?
Yeah.
If a tree falls in the forest.
Well, China's a pretty big forest, Paul. I mean, apparently, yes. I would assume that a billion Chinese people knew about it. It's just
if China was a forest, we wouldn't be having any global warming problems.
That's true. Sure. That's a good point. Xiao ice baby.
Yeah.
Xiao means little, I think, in Chinese.
Little Bing.
Oh, Bing. Little Bing. Ice is Bing? Yep.
That's
the name of their Bing?
Bing is the back end. Yep.
Oh. And they call it ice like in China.
It's like a little version of Bing, like a little cute thing that can.
Xiao Bing like would be good. Bing. Xiao Bing, but Xiao Bing actually probably means something in Chinese, whereas Xiaoyi ice is not a Chinese word.
Yeah.
So, ice is what they call Bing in China, is what you're saying.
I don't know if that's true, but whenever they say what does Xiao ice mean, they say little Bing.
Little Bing.
Mm-hmm. Little Bing.
I like it. I like that name better than Cortana.
Xiao Ice. Well, it's, you know, Xiao is spelled X-I-A-O. That's not going to.
Yeah. That's why when you look at
it's
it,
not
you're
intuitive.
Like, well, as a Westerner, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
Xiao. Do we do all of the Xiao Ice stuff?
No, we should talk about Alexa and PCs.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah, there are some follow-up stories here.
PC makers are not using Cortana. They're using Amazon Echo's voice service instead. Is that what you're saying?
Not exactly. So to be fair to PC makers, they are putting far-field microphones in their devices and good speakers and so forth for Cortana purposes. And the far-field mic idea is that you're standing across the room and your laptop sitting there open and you say, hey, see, and it responds, even if there's music playing or other noise happening. So they're doing that. But four of the biggest PC makers in the world, who are they? Acer, Asus,
HP,
and Lenovo, I think, right?
Dell is doing it?
Not that I'm aware of. But they're all putting Alexa on their computers as well. And that's interesting. I on the one hand, you could argue, as some have, that this is a little bit like putting any crapware in your computer, that they're getting paid and that might have part of it. But when, you know, Cortana is just kind of available. I mean, there's something to be said for doing what your customers may be asking for. And one of the things that's, I think it might be tied to this a little bit. There was a guy from Amazon, and this was in the context of a music announcement, but they were saying, you know, it's really interesting with the Echo speakers and our smart assistant technology that we're reaching demographics that you kind of wouldn't expect, that we didn't expect. And the two that they mentioned explicitly were old people and country music listeners. And this is what they said. But the theory is that these audiences are among the last to ever embrace new technology. And yet, when it comes to Echo and the assistant that they have, they've actually seen a much higher than usual percentage of those audiences. Those types of people, old people, are the types of people that would rely on a computer instead of using a phone because maybe the screen's too small for them to see, or a tablet, right? That they might be more comfortable with this kind of old school technology. The other thing to think about with this is that in a home of these devices, you know, you could buy multiple speakers, but if you already have a laptop or a computer that you're using, it could just be another one of the things that you can respond to. So if you have this set up correctly, you should be able to walk around your house and talk, and the assistant will respond to you, but it will be whichever one is closest to you. And in a smart system, I know Google does this. I'm sure Amazon does as well. You don't have two of these things competing with each other to try to answer your question. It knows that the other ones exist and they can intelligently handle that kind of stuff. The computer has a screen too, by the way. So that kind of helps with, you know, visual results, which I know Amazon is doing and Google is as well. So it makes a certain amount of sense, but again, but it also points to this thing with Cortana where it's there, but it's not really clear that many people are using it, and putting Alexa on PCs certainly isn't going to help.
So they're not putting Cortana on, right? It's
well, Kecko, they can't take it out. Cortana. Yeah, Cortana is built into.
So if on a PC like that, you could say both, C or hey A, and
that's right.
Whichever you talk to would respond.
Yep,
I don't think that's a bad thing.
I mean, you know, the new Microsoft would agree with you that we're willing to work with whatever people want to use.
And on the other hand, I never ever talk to my computer. I don't.
Yes, and neither do I. And actually, I would say one of the goofy things about this is I found instances where speaking to the phone makes some sense.
Yes,
and
I do that,
that
a lot.
Obvious.
I do that driving, a lot. I send texts that way often.
I can't type on a phone to this day to save my life. Yep. I am a messy typist on a computer, but on a phone, I might as well have hoofs.
Yep.
And so speaking a text message is wonderful. It allows me to send text messages.
Do it all
the time. It works great.
Yep.
You know, on the computer, it's like, not so much, you know, but I type. I mean, for other people who aren't, have to kind of hunt and peck. I mean, it might make sense to talk. I want to know what the weather is. You know, you could open a browser and type in weather or click on a link, but it would just say, what's the weather forecast? Your computer's there. I mean, if you're using it anyway, you know, why wouldn't it be good at this?
And on top of this, Microsoft has acquired a company called Semantic Machines. This is to beef up Cortana, right?
Well, that's the thing. So I when I saw this, there were headlines about – well, actually, Microsoft emailed me. I got a thing from Microsoft late at night, and I said, I'll look at this in the morning. And so I got up, and I looked through my
feed. I love your dedication to your craft, Paul.
It was like – seriously, it was 11 o'clock at night.
It was late.
Look, if it was Terry Myerson, I would have I'm watching House Hunters.
I'm busy right now.
I got up in the morning and I looked at what was going on in the world, and this was one of the stories. And I saw the way people had reported it. And a lot of the headlines were Microsoft buys Semantic Machines to improve Cortana. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. And then you look at the Microsoft announcement, and I looked at the email they sent me, and they don't actually say that. In fact, it's kind of interesting to me that they're sent – let me get the language right. I'll just bring up my – or their article even, but they mentioned that they're setting up an AI – oh boy, where is this? They're setting up – I can't find the exact phrase, but they're setting up some kind of like an AI center, a conversational AI center of excellence in Berkeley, California.
That's what I do.
But that's where Semantic Machines is from. It's not where Cortana's developed.
Right? Is it the new Cortana team?
That's what I'm – see, this is the thing. I don't think it's – no, I wouldn't put it that way. But I wonder if these guys, this small team of people, this startup, has figured out something that Microsoft has not been able to do on their own, which they described very vaguely. But a revolutionary new approach to building conversational AI. We were just talking about conversational AI. This is huge. It's sophisticated. You want to get this right. Microsoft, as we've just demonstrated, has some capabilities there. But apparently what these guys have done is even better. You would think you'd be bringing these guys to Redmond or integrating them into the Cortana / AI whatever team. But no, it seems like they're going to move people to where these guys are.
Well, it was kind of an acqui-hire, right? Like if you look at the list of people who they got, one of the people who is part of this company is former Apple chief speech scientist Larry Gillick.
Gillick. Yeah, I mean, I think there's probably a handful of people who are brilliant at this.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And everybody's fighting to get that person.
Right. Yep.
And, you know, it's not that far away from – a lot of the Cortana work, I think, is still done in the Bay Area. So I don't think it's that far away. But I agree with you. It was kind of vague how this would all be applied. They mentioned –
well, if you look at the mentions of Cortana in the announcement –
there's not many.
There's only a few, and it's never directly correlated, like – the work they're doing in here will make this thing better. It never actually says that.
And no, they just say we're continuing to develop our work in conversational AI with Cortana and Xiao Ice, they also call out. So
It's interesting. I'm just pointing it out because you're right. There was, I think, a big part of it was the people, but apparently these guys have done something that has been kind of on the down low, and they want to swoop in and grab it before, you know. And we'll see. We'll see what comes out of it.
Yep.
Righty. Watch out, A word.
I know. Yep. I keep forgetting to do that. Sorry.
We're going to be reduced to emojis soon. We're not going to be able to say anything on the show.
Yeah. All words will be taken by assistants.
Well, plus people are going to be able to use custom phrases, and then we're going to be inadvertently.
That's not our problem.
It's going to be our problem. There's going to be a problem when they complain. Tell me your safe words, people, and I'm going to yell them off the podcast. Yeah.
We need code names for these things that we could use on the show. Yeah, yeah.
So
it is getting difficult.
It is.
A word. Watch out. Google's coming. H word. What?
Okay. Let me parse what Leo just said.
Yes.
No, basically what's happened is in the last year, Google Assistant usage has grown by like over 700%. Echo / Amazon Assistant usage has doubled. But Google now has over half of the usage, or I guess it's market share really, of the Echo speakers in the smart speaker space. And that's kind of a big deal because Google Assistant obviously has huge share on phones. It's built in. Google has huge share in smart speakers because they were first and they're actually very popular. So Google has had to kind of come from behind to make that happen, but it looks like they're going to catch up. And that it's kind of a big deal because Amazon has done a really good job with their assistant in adding, capabilities through skills or whatever they call them, skills and on that platform. But, and they have vast compatibility across smart home devices and all that kind of stuff. And it's in the home, and that's kind of, we think of this as like the smart home market, but really these assistants are for everywhere. Cars, out in the world with your phone, homes as well. And so Google catching up to Amazon at home, which is what this represents, is actually kind of a big deal because it's the first kind of concrete evidence I've seen to support what I thought was going to happen all along, which was that they're absolutely going to catch up. I mean, I think they both remain major players, and either one is number one, the other is number two, whatever, but I think Google's gonna catch up just through sheer force of AI will or whatever.
But that's why that Xiaomi's thing is interesting because it's not
Microsoft is screwed, Leo. Don't forget about Xiaomi.
Okay. That's now here is this story that baffled me. Mixed reality in SharePoint. Oh, finally! Just what I've been waiting for.
Before you get into this, if I could just ask, can you point to a person who has actually looked at this and said what Leo just said, but non-ironically, and then literally said, this is a game changer. This is one of the silliest things I've ever heard.
No.
So there was a big SharePoint conference in Las Vegas this week, and this was the headline announcement that they are creating a capability in SharePoint called SharePoint Spaces that will let you use a tethered headset to look at things and create things for storage in SharePoint that are using mixed reality. And the examples they give for these kinds of things are like, wouldn't you like to look at things like population data or financial data in 3D and be able to like navigate around in it and get a better appreciation and understanding of the data? No, I wouldn't, actually. I don't know. I know why they did this, because Microsoft's missive is to apply AI and mixed reality across its entire product line. But
without
does this make
filter,
sense?
I mean, I'd rather see a team deathmatch version of SharePoint than a VR version,
Yeah.
I don't understand this.
It's puzzling. The other interesting point, though, that I found, again, I just found this out today. I thought this was for HoloLens and mixed reality headsets, Windows mixed reality headsets. It's not.
Yeah.
It's for Windows mixed reality headsets and any tethered headset, including the Oculus Rift. So would you like want to look at SharePoint data using that? No, I don't know.
That's it's crazy.
It's odd. And this was the centerpiece of a bunch of SharePoint announcements they made this week. But everyone who looked at it were kind of like, huh, what? I said in my write-up of it, I'm like, I think this is one of those cases of a solution in search of a problem, right? They've decided we're doing this, right? And then you're like, but why?
Yeah, right. in fact, I believe it was Satya Nadella that literally got up on a stage in Seattle recently and said, you know, we need to start asking ourselves not whether we can do something, but whether we should do those things. And he was talking about more kind of moral concerns or whatever, but it's kind of weird. Like,
The only one piece of this that I thought, okay, maybe there is you also can do this without a headset. So you can actually, look at and manipulate the data in a browser. I don't know exactly how technologically they do this, but you'll be able to manipulate
WebVR or whatever. It's
WebVR, I guess, right? So you're going to be able to do it in any browser, any mobile browser, have the same like look at the data. Although if you have a headset, it'll be much more immersive. But if you don't have the headset, you still can do this in a browser.
You know, they probably have some canonical
use
example
case
that makes this make sense, right? But when I think about the types of things I'd be collaborating on, like our home finances, you know, I find that the red numbers and the green numbers work, and that, you know, 2D is okay. Like I don't really need to visualize the population of the earth or you know, the spread of
was carbon. It Microsoft that did the demo where you're walking through, it looks like this super office space, it's beautiful. And everybody's looking at it and wowing. And then they take off their helmets and it's just a warehouse. Was that? That would be.
Yeah, that sounds like a HoloLens thing where they were designing like an office space virtually.
That would be a use. Yeah. I mean, kind of a use, right?
But doesn't you guys are familiar with the movie and or book Disclosure, right? By Michael Crichton, where he envisioned this kind of, I would call it a VR data store that looked like a library in this VR world. It was like if you conceptualize like computer hard drive storage as a library visually, you could walk up and pull out a book and that was a file and you could open it up and you'd read the file. And, you know, it was done for kind of dramatic purposes in the movie because someone was trying to kill him in real life and he was virtually walking around a building like an idiot. But that's what this looked like to me. Like we have literally someone said, you know, I really like Michael Crichton. Let's make this thing and we'll put it in SharePoint because we hate everybody.
Well, it's also Ready Player One. It's the whole idea that your real life is now is a pale imitation of your virtual life. Yeah. And that in your virtual life, you can do almost anything.
Leo, now that I have Master Prestige in Call of Duty, that is actually a fact. My real life is a
It just it reminded me of Second Life, right? I was like,
yes.
Are we going back to that again?
Right.
I don't know.
I think it's just too soon. So we're not there yet.
I'm a doubter here on this one, but that was a big announcement this week. And you can sign up to be part of the private preview as of this week if you want to get access to SharePoint Spaces.
The ability to put like 3D objects into what would be a 2D PowerPoint presentation makes more sense than this. Like, it is more generally applicable, right? I would think so. And I sort of looked at that like, you're like, okay, maybe you're kind of creating a higher quality visual, maybe, or at least a visually differentiated kind of PowerPoint presentation. But I just feel like this has such a limited, the notion that people are going to get together in a room, put on their headsets and explore, I don't know.
Well, we saw data. That at Build. Remember that Smart Office demo they had at Build? There was one person who was wearing a headset. And they were looking at data in 3D.
What that woman was just doing. She had on a headset. She had two motion controllers.
She looks so dorky.
No, but that is more physical dexterity than most people have. Right there, just doing that. The notion that a normal human being is going to – my mother can't walk through a doorway without hitting it. Are you telling me that she's going to put – look, she's got headphones on. Or I guess they're built into the thing.
Nobody's going to sit in their office doing this. You're going to go – I mean
– this is crazy.
You're going to lock yourself in the bathroom if you're going to do this.
Yeah, you'll be locked in a room, all right. I just just doesn't. There's a lot of overhead to this.
There is.
Most of that overhead means money in the pocket of Microsoft.
I wonder who's ever going to try this, except people at Microsoft for the sake of demoing this.
You know, enhanced onboarding, that's straight out of The Circle, that dystopian story of Google, where she has this weird 3D in onboarding experience, and then she takes it off, and they said, why'd you take it off?
Also, I'm pretty sure that's what Scientologists do, onboarding.
Yeah, enhanced onboarding. Oh, boy. Okay. Yeah. Well, look, they're looking at the future. They're thinking about the future.
They're trying to find more uses for mixed reality.
Yeah.
I will throw out that this would have been very interesting at Build.
Although they kind of showed it without saying it, right? That I think it was part of that Office demo.
Yeah.
Okay. We just didn't know what we were seeing, right?
I guess what I sort of meant by that, even though I'm now just walking through it, is that I sort of feel like Build should be about the future.
It should be whizzy. Exciting. Yeah.
And I think that this thing, today in, day out SharePoint, guys, this is nonsense. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like the developer stuff they showed off at Build, a lot of it today in, day out, like line of business app developers. The notion that we're going to be spicing up our apps with AI is ludicrous. It's just too far ahead. But at least it's futuristic. It kind of goes with the theme, I think, that Build should be. I just feel like this fits more in with that kind of thing than it does to, hey, SharePoint guys, here's what you'll be doing this year. Like, nope. No, it's not. I don't speak for the SharePoint community, obviously, but if I did, I would tell them that this is ludicrous.
I didn't see that many people. I follow a lot of people in the SharePoint community on Twitter, and I didn't really see. I saw people like tweeting it because it was like, yeah, this is what we just announced. But I didn't see anyone saying, okay, this is super, and I can't wait to use it.
Yeah. Right. You know what this is? This is to SharePoint what Windows 8 was to Windows. It's insanity, and you just have to kind of embrace it and laugh and just hope that it passes.
Dude, that was a low blow right there.
No, but it's crazy. Like, if you said to someone ahead of this announcement, this is what we're going to do, they would think you were messing with them.
Right.
You know? It's like
it was
an
funny
April
because
Fool's
it leaked that morning. That video leaked and Walking Cat found it. And he said, I think this is supposed to be a joke video or something, right? Like, he thought it was fake.
Nope.
That was the right reaction.
Nope. Not a joke. It's real. It's your future.
The joke is just that thinking that people are going to do what this woman does in the video. Put on the headset, pick up the two controllers, everything's working fine, and then she just uses it like it's normal. That is really hard to do.
Yeah.
You might as well
just see myself getting nauseous.
And nobody really wants it. The real point is this only makes sense to do this if it in some way improves the experience. And it doesn't. It just makes it hard and fiddly.
Yeah. Remember, I think it was a HoloLens, but it doesn't matter. But they did a demo where a car maker, a designer at a car company, virtually created a new car, and it allowed them to kind of walk around it, which really helps because they build these kind of clay-based models off of the drawings that they make to kind of conceptualize.
When we were at Ford 5 years ago, they were doing that.
Yeah, that type of thing makes sense. It's a total vertical niche market, whatever, but it makes sense.
Yeah.
This kind of thing, I'm sure they have an example where – whatever that market is, it makes sense. But, I mean, for the broader world, SharePoint is a very general tool. I just don't see this being a mainstream thing.
How about the notion that it makes it easy to create these experiences?
But you're easy to create something templates. No one will ever use. What's the point
They have some
of
kind of a template, right, which I haven't seen in use. But they're saying it'll be like a smart template where you can drag these 3D representations into the template.
Yeah. But then who wants it? you've created
easy. No, no one can use it. But it was easy.
In the notes, we say, is it a smart idea or has Microsoft jumped the shark? And I think we both are saying shark has been jumped.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes. Yep.
Okay, Fonzie.
All right. You know, Mork debuted on Happy Days.
Really?
Mork and Mindy. Yeah. He was originally in an episode of
Are you listening to the Robin biography? Is that how you know that?
Yeah. And it was in the same season that Fonzie jumped the shark. We can, I think it's safe to say that they had run out of ideas.
They go together. We have an alien in suspenders and Fonzie's going to jump over a shark.
Yep.
That book is good. I'm enjoying it. I haven't gotten to that part yet.
I like Ron Howard.
I do like Ron Howard. Everybody likes Ron Howard. He's the most likable guy in show business after Tom Hanks.
Interesting. Okay, that's fair. And they've worked together.
Who hasn't?
All right.
Everybody's worked with Tom Hanks. New to the OneDrive roadmap.
Yeah, so Stephen Rose over at Microsoft had a post concurrent with this SharePoint event where they announced Spaces. I'm gonna bring this up so I get this right, but talking about coming improvements to OneDrive. But if you kind of scan through it and you go and look at their roadmap page, what you discover is most of the things he talks about are actually coming to OneDrive for Business. They have a bad habit of just saying OneDrive, and it's not really clear which one they mean. There was one update coming to consumer consumer OneDrive, which is the built-in scanner functionality, which of course is based on Office Lens, and they're going to just make it easier to do that stuff, and there's some additional tools there. But this is kind of interesting. There's a feature coming to OneDrive for Business that I think a lot of power users especially would like to see on consumer, which is called known folder move. So if you're familiar with the way consumer OneDrive works now, you can go to settings and you can say, I want to have my documents, desktop, and or pictures folders in OneDrive. And when you do that, they sync between all your computers. It works the way, you know, like the Mac works, you know, with Apple does that kind of iCloud-based sync. It's a good idea. But the issue is you can't move the location. So if you say you're going to sync them to OneDrive, it's a checkbox. You do it, you don't, whatever, but you don't get to say where it goes. A lot of people would like to say, well, I want OneDrive or I want parts of OneDrive to be in different places. Like this feature is going to allow administrators to specify where those folders are, not just that they're going to be used, but where they are. And that's a really useful feature. So I'm kind of curious if that ever comes to consumer OneDrive. I'd like to see that happen. And I think with the way they're making those two products more and more alike, actually, that's not even the right word. They're kind of basing both of those products on the same technology, right? They're sort of the same underlying engine, et cetera. You know, maybe something they'll do. It seems like it would be possible.
Okay. Now Mary Jo, you may go to sleep.
I will leave now. I will be back.
You've all been waiting to go play with your cat. While Paul gives us the Xbox update.
Yeah, there are two things that I think are relevant this week. One is that the first version of the June update for Xbox One has gone out to folks who were in the alpha ring of the Xbox preview program, formerly the Xbox Insiders program. Like every one of these updates, it has a bunch of new features. But the cool one, and this is so needed, is basically the equivalent of when Apple added folders to the iOS home screen, because you run into the scale issue where you have more and more apps and games, actually mostly games, that you have either installed or purchased. And when you go to your page where you can see all that stuff, it's this kind of monotonous list of tiles. So what they're doing is adding a grouping feature where you can group those things and you can mix and match between apps and games, whatever. So I might have like a Call of Duty group or whatever, and all my Call of Duty games would be in there. Or I could have a group for, you know, first-person shooters, however you want to organize it, doesn't matter. But now you have this thing that is a lot more organized to your taste, a lot easier to kind of look through and find things in, and it syncs between your accounts. So if you have multiple consoles, this thing will just be applied to the next console you get or to your other console. So it's kind of a cool feature. And there's some other stuff, but that's the big one that we know about so far. The other big news, of course, is that I did Master Prestige recently, and I want to make sure everyone understands that, because Master Prestiging in Call of Duty is an indication not so much of your ability to play the game well, but your ability to play the game a lot.
The hours, how many hours you've played, right?
I don't want to even talk about that.
Yeah, I want to know. Number. I got to know. But inquiring minds. Let's hear the stats.
We're not going to do that. No. So tied to this, though, they did announce Black Ops 4, which, of course, is the next version of Call of Duty, and confirming the rumors they're not going to have a single-player campaign, which makes tons of sense because, actually, we do have this data now. You can look at the achievement list, but no one really plays the single-player campaign anyway. So there's been a weird uproar over this, but the truth is no one does it. So what's the difference? In fact, the previous Black Ops game, which was the first version of Call of Duty where I never finished the single-player campaign, has the lowest ever completion rate for any Call of Duty game on Xbox. And I think it's for the same reason. It's just terrible. It's not interesting.
It's really, that's interesting.
And so people, what people do spend time on with Call of Duty, and again, I am the living example of this, is multiplayer, because it's kind of an evergreen thing. It just keeps going and going, obviously. But they, over the course of the year after that game comes out, they released DLC in the form of map packs and other improvements to multiplayer, which includes, you know, zombie and the war mode they have now in World War II. And so, you know, the game continues and evolves. And so they're going to be doing that stuff. And they're introducing a battle royale mode, which also confirms that thing I've been saying for a long time, which is that when you look at a game like Fortnite, Overwatch to some degree, and certainly PUBG, I kind of question why they're popular in some ways, because I look at that and I think that's a game mode in Call of Duty. And so if you look at any Call of Duty multiplayer experience, there's got to be like 30 something different game modes when you kind of mix and match all the variants. And I've always thought that a battle royale mode would be the easiest thing in the world for Call of Duty to do. I don't understand why they don't have this exact thing. And now they're going to. So they're going to get into that esports / battle royale thing in Black Ops 4. So now I got nothing to do for the next 6 months. But eventually this game will come out, and then, you know, life will be good again.
Good. Mary Jo's really done a great job of not passing out during mm-hmm. that segment. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I was typing in the beer pick, so that worked out well.
I don't know what it is, but now I feel like drinking. Oh, right. It was Paul talking.
Let's take a teeny-weeny break and come back with the back of the book. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley will offer us their tips, their tricks, their code names, their beer picks. But first, a word from Moogsoft. Moogsoft, I've been learning about Moogsoft. I'm not the frontline IT guy anymore, thank God. I don't have the carry the beeper. But the people who do tell me one of the biggest problems is kind of beeper fatigue or pager fatigue. Actually, nowadays it really isn't so much a beeper as messaging alerts, email alerts, notifications on your phone, that kind of thing. But you get too many of them, it's just noise. It turns into noise. What you need is the right alert at the right time, just the right alert, just at the right time, to give you an actionable item, right? And a lot of times that means just collapsing a bunch of alerts into one, that kind of thing. That's what Moogsoft does. When all those alerts and tickets light up like a Christmas tree, it's not making you more productive. It's just stressing you out. At best, it's teaching you to ignore them. At worst, it's turning you into a wreck. Good news. You can immediately reduce the noise with Moogsoft AI Ops. AI, in this case, algorithmic IT. Algorithmic IT Ops reduces your IT alerts and tickets by up to 99% guaranteed, but it does it in a smart way. Moogsoft's patented technology correlates events, collapses them down into actionable work items. They call them situations. And that's really what you want. You got a situation, here's what you can do. Gets you focused on tackling the stuff that matters. Really, it's quite amazing. I'll give you an example. HCL Technologies, which is a global IT managed service provider. You can imagine, if you're in the managed service providing business for IT, you got many clients. You don't just have the alerts for the one. You have them all. They have a award-winning dry ice platform. That's how they keep track of all this stuff. And they incorporated Moogsoft's AI Ops is the event management layer within dry ice. They say that's helped its clients. This is HCL Technologies talking. Streamline operational workflows, reduce time in the detect to correct life cycle of incident tickets. And this is the one. This is the number you want. A 33% reduction of mean time to restore. That's a big improvement. Enabling them to support more customers with service quality and keeping operational costs low, efficiency high. It'll work for you. It works for HCL Technologies and their dry ice platform. With Moogsoft AI Ops, reduce your IT alerts and tickets by up to 99% right now. Go to Moogsoft.com. You can get a demo. Moogsoft.com. I was telling Paul, you see the cow logo for Moogsoft. They wanted Moogsoft because they like cows. Couldn't get that, but they also like synthesizers. So Moogsoft was born. M-O-O-G, Moogsoft.com. Learn more and get a demo. We thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. Now we go to Paul Thurrott as we begin the back of the book with his tip of the week.
This is going to be all over the map because I have a couple things that just occurred to me. One, you know, people ask me sometimes why I don't do some kind of a pick like Mary Jo does. Like I could do a hard alcohol pick or a wine pick or whatever. But
booze pick of the week, yeah.
Yeah, I'd say this. I guess two words just to put this idea in your head. Summer's upon us almost. Wine slushies are a thing.
I was okay. You know what? I experienced my first wine slushie.
It's awesome.
I didn't drink it because it didn't look awesome.
It's awesome. It's awesome.
Made
with good wine.
I was at a bar. We were having a reunion for the 20th anniversary of ZDTV, mm-hmm. of Tech TV. And we're at a, you know, it was in the Tenderloin in San Francisco. I thought, oh, this is going to be the dive bar.
That's where you'd find wine slushy.
Right. It's not a dive bar. It's a hipster bar. There are all these startup guys in skinny jeans with goatees. And the bar is it's a half outdoors, so they provide blankets. So there's all these hipsters in blankets. And I'm looking what they're drinking is pink slushies.
Yes.
And I said, what the hell is that? First of all, you're wearing a blanket. So this seems ill-advised.
All right.
They said it's a rosé slushy.
Yeah.
That's good?
That's excellent. Well, it can be. So here's the tip. This is Paul Thurrott's wine slushy tip of the week. If you're going to make a wine slushy, you have to do it the right way. If you're going to buy one in a restaurant or a bar, you have to ask them if they do it this way. And it's this. They have to make the ice out of the wine.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, you're just watering it down.
Yeah.
So if the rosé was frozen and then they crushed that into the ice that made it its way into the ice slushy, that's going to be a good drink.
Really?
Yeah.
It's really cold.
Yep.
I guess if it's really hot out, that would be
just
good.
Throw it out there.
All right. But you can't make it with water ice. You got to make it.
No, because then you're just drinking. You're paying for nothing. You're paying for
a little wine on top of some frozen water.
Yeah.
That's shave ice.
And then in a completely different direction, I didn't put this in the notes.
Mary Jo is just grinning.
I know, I'm so sorry.
I'm grinning because this matches so well with my beer pick of the week.
Oh, good.
Oh, good. Oh, that's good.
Excellent.
So this won't match to anything, but I just found this out, and this will not help you. If you're listening on Friday or Thursday or Friday or later in the year, whatever, it's over already. But today only, Wednesday, March 23rd. The base Amazon
May
Kindle
23rd.
And the Kindle Paperwhite. May what did I say, June?
May 23rd. March 23rd.
What, did I say March?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
It's May. Whatever. May. The base Amazon Kindle and the Kindle Paperwhite are both $30 off today only at Amazon.
Good deal.
So,
yeah. I love the Paperwhite.
So, yep.
I bought the Oasis, which is the crazy expensive one. That was dumb, but
I bought a Paperwhite literally 3 years ago. I noticed when I went to Amazon.com, but those are good prices. So just, you know. If you're listening now, you don't have one and want one.
You got a little reading to do.
So my actual tip, to finally use my way into that, is about, it's actually kind of related in a very strange way to your last ad there, which is about limiting distractions and annoyances. And in this case, with smartphones, I think we're coming to understand we have a smartphone addiction problem.
Yes.
And I think anyone with a smartphone suffers with it to some degree. I mean, I don't commute to work and go out into the world a lot at all, actually. But when I do, you know, I'm like many people, I'm kind of on my phone. And so, you know, what do you do about that kind of thing? And I've been talking to my wife about this, and we both kind of agree that, you know, one of the smart things you can do, well, you could get a Windows phone. That would solve the problem. But no, but you could.
They're really not distracting.
No, don't do that. Don't.
Not at all.
You know, first of all, it's something we all do when we get smartphones. I sit there and turn off notifications as they happen. But I think minimizing the amount of notifications you get is one of the key things. I often just put my phone in do not disturb mode, you know, mm-hmm. and it causes a lot of things to go to, you know, voicemail or text messages come. You don't get alerted, whatever. But I actually, that's pretty much been my solution. My wife experimented with putting her phone into a kind of a black and white or a grayscale mode, which I thought was kind of interesting. And she had read about that somewhere as a potential solution, and she eventually stopped doing it because some of the apps she uses, like Duolingo, the colors weren't differentiated enough and it made it too hard to use those apps. I noticed recently too, and this is something I may or may not write about, I've been kind of experimenting with it. There's actually, if you use Android, a new launcher called Siempo, and it's designed to do all those things I just said. It actually cuts down on all, especially social media type stuff. The version as I downloaded it the other day was basically just mostly white with black, really kind of basic icons. Now they have a version that's kind of the reverse of that, like a dark theme. I'd actually like to see basically like a gray screen with black icons and so forth. But this is something I think we're all going to have to deal with. Like, I think we're going to have to – I think we have a problem, you know. So I don't have anything formal here yet. I mean, I might may or may not write about this soon, like I said. But I do think this is something we might want to get on top of. Also, wine slushies. And then the app pick of the week, which I heard recently was Mary Jo's favorite app, is Twitter Lite or Twitter for Windows 10, which is, of course, the PWA version of the Twitter. So one of the neat things that's happening now that Twitter has moved to this model is that they can update all of their apps at once because it's one code base. And you're seeing that happen. I mean, already in the month or less than a month that since this app came out, they've updated it a bunch of times. They updated it, I think it was last night. They added the night theme that people have been asking for, which is kind of like the dark mode you see in Windows 10 if you use that in the UI. They improved the box where you type in your tweets. And they did auto-updating for certain things. I think it was like comments, replies, and retweets, I think, are auto-updated in that column. So it's nice because if you were using Windows 10, or you are using Windows 10, and you were using the Twitter app for Windows 10, one of the things you would have noticed is that it never gets updated, right? So when Twitter moved to the bigger character mode, you know, sometime last year, that app was never updated to support that. And that's a huge problem. But now that the store app is on, it's the same app as their web app, essentially, these things all get updated at one time. And that's the central benefit of PWAs. And so I realize they might have some user, you know, stuff that makes it less viable for certain people if you like, you know, tweeting or other apps. But for me, this thing hits like right at where I want it to be. Like, it's perfect for me. So
there's no multi-column, right? That's my problem with it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
Yep.
I need multiple columns.
Yeah, I don't.
Okay.
So, yeah. But yeah, it's not right. I see, you know, like in the same way that I was talking about walking down a plane, you look at what everyone uses. I always do this. I had observed recently on my most recent flight that lots and lots of people are using phones now to watch movies and stuff. I know everyone has a phone, but in the old days, you would see laptops open. Not the old days, like 2 weeks ago, or an iPad or whatever. I saw a lot of phones, and that was an interesting thing. I think just putting power on the plane kind of solves the issue that people had with that. Phone screens are often the most beautiful screen we have. I coincidentally had watched an HDR movie, or I guess it was a TV show, on Netflix on my Samsung Galaxy S9 Plus, and it's gorgeous. I think that this is like that, if that makes sense. Oh, and yeah. Hold on, I've heard from Mehdi. Mehdi says that Tweetin uses a native module which does not work on Windows 10 for ARM.
Uh-huh. In other words, I didn't write this. Just wrote a rapper.
My response to that was, loser, all
get
caps.
To work. Write your own modules. Hey, I have a, can I do a pick?
Of course. Sure.
Tell me, Paul, what you think of this. Or maybe Mary Jo. All 10 Star Trek movies for $30. Today only on iTunes.
Wow.
10 movies for the exact price they're worth, $3 each.
So by the way, this is okay. This in the scheme of tips, last night I do this every once in a while. Every Tuesday, Apple updates like their, you know, the movies page or whatever. And I go every week and I look at what they have. They have a $1 rental, and I usually just grab it because it's like a buck.
Yeah, I usually do too. Yeah,
yeah, and then they have another page that's like $1 rentals or cheap rentals or whatever it is. And I go through there and sometimes I throw some in, and sometimes I literally don't watch them. The time expires. But a lot of times my wife and I will be sitting there with nothing to do, or I'm traveling or whatever it is. This is kind of a good deal. But last night I spent over $40 on movies.
$1 movies.
Well, they were all like, there's a bunch of movies on sale right now for like $5 or $6 each, whatever. I mean, I don't know what happened, but I was like, oh, God. Like, you know, this
Star Trek,
you know,
movies for $30? Come on.
Like, this is goofy, but one movie I'm a huge fan of is called The Arrival. It's that Charlie Sheen science fiction movie. I've not ever bought it because every time I look at it, it's like $12.99, $15, you know.
That's a phrase doesn't really sell me. Charlie Sheen science fiction movie.
No, it was before he went south. It's an excellent movie. And I've always wanted, you know, so last night I bought it was $5.
$5? The Arrival. Yeah. Yeah, I should do that. I should do every week. I should go look. What is that? Tuesday they do that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, I'm wondering if this – I didn't see the Star Trek movies. I saw the Death Wish movies were like, not that I bought one of those, but those were all $5.
They're
like,
fun. They're fun.
But if I had seen that, my wife would have come downstairs this morning and said, why did you spend $75 a day? Because now it's going to happen. I'm going to go buy those movies.
It's still available. Oh, somebody in the chat room says The Arrival is really good. It's about the aliens with the backward knees.
It's really good. It's excellent. All right. And okay. the bad guy in this movie, who's unfortunately dead now.
Alan Rickman?
No, he was just like Alan Rickman. No, he's like a classic bad guy from 90s movies. Yeah. Oh, that's awful. I can't think of his name. But anyway, the movie's excellent. It's really, really good.
I'll have to see it now.
Yeah.
Ron Silver?
It is. Ron Silver. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. Just Charlie Sheen sci-fi. That's a mix. Mix made in heaven.
Okay, first of all, he made Platoon. Platoon is excellent.
Platoon is a great movie, but it's not. Yeah.
This movie is excellent.
Charlie Sheen is a young, mild-mannered astronomer. I don't know.
Yep. No.
Really?
He's excellent in it.
Okay. I'm buying it right now.
I'm serious. It's excellent. It's a really good movie.
By
the way, they made a sequel. The sequel is a dumpster fire. But the first one is excellent.
Was it? I want to say that's a Carl Sagan book, The Arrival. Maybe not.
No, you're thinking of the...
Contact.
Contact, yeah. Which is the...
The greatest danger facing our world has been the planet's best-kept secret until
it's
now.
Excellent.
For centuries, we've been watching the skies.
People listening to this who love sci-fi, they'll love this movie.
I'm going to get excellent. It right now. I don't know how I've not seen it.
You're going to come if you watch this. You're going to come back and say you were right. This, how did I not know about this movie? It's excellent.
Next week.
You mean you'd be right twice on this show?
Twice. Amazing.
Look, you guys throw me under the bus for the NVX2. I'm just saying this is a good movie.
Amazing. Mary Jo Foley, it's time for your Enterprise Pick of the Week.
Okay, first, no one's noticed this yet, but I don't know if you've seen my awesome shirt that I'm wearing today.
No, let's see. Wait a minute.
Oh, yeah, look at that.
Contoso. What is Contoso?
You know what Contoso is?
No.
Microsoft.
Contoso is one of those fake company names that Microsoft uses in all their enterprise demos.
Oh, how funny. Oh, that's a great
Along
shirt
with
to have.
Fabricam and Northwind Trading.
Oh,
there's
that's an
like
awesome
a whole bunch
shirt.
Of fake companies.
I love
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so I got this shirt at Build, and I was like, you know what? I'm one of the few people who really can rock this shirt because I understand what it means.
Contoso. Other people think.
I get Contoso.
It's like Aviato.
I got it.
Contoso. Right.
It's perfect to break in the Enterprise Pick of the Week with Contoso because we were making fun of SharePoint Spaces earlier, but there was some real Enterprise SharePoint news announced this week. We already knew there was going to be a SharePoint Server 2019 coming out at some point this year. That's the next on-premises version of SharePoint Server. The last one, the previous one was 2016. So this is the first one they're going to have in 3 years. They announced at the conference this week that the public preview for this will be out in June, so next month. And they're starting to talk about some of the features that are going to be in this. And it's nothing surprising. It's all things that are already in SharePoint Online, which is what it should be. They're taking some of the features that have been well used in SharePoint Online that you don't need to be online to use and bringing them to SharePoint Server. So they talked about things like support for, quote, modern team sites, communication sites, lists, libraries, and pages, all coming to SharePoint Server 2019. And they also said you are going to be able to develop with the new SharePoint framework in a way that will be consistent across SharePoint Online and SharePoint Server so that you can manage hybrid scenarios. This is the stuff SharePoint users really care about. When is this coming? We believe this will be out this fall as far as general availability. Microsoft just said later this year, but I saw a couple of references saying this fall. So I would guess September, October, around the time when the next version of Windows Server hits.
Oh, when you go to contoso.com, you get the Microsoft Store.
Nice.
I just thought I'd check.
Nice.
They'll do anything to drive usage to that store.
There's also
this was one of the hottest shirts at Build. Joe Belfiore had this shirt on. Not this shirt, but
not this,
this
exact
same
shirt.
It's hysterical.
A very small
He's
person.
He's a lot smaller than I am, actually. It's hysterical. So he probably had the size small on.
Very funny. Very fun. There's a Wikipedia article with all the fictional Microsoft companies. There are quite a few.
Yeah, there are.
But they seem to use Contoso more than anybody else.
Contoso's kind of the most famous one.
Yeah. Fabricam, you mentioned. Margie's Travel.
Northwind Trading on there. That's
Northwind Traders.
That.
Yep. NorthwindTraders.com. StrikeStrike.com. Tailspin Toys, Tasmanian Traders. The Volcano Coffee Company.
Oh, yeah. Volcano Coffee.
Yeah. Jeez. I forgot. That's an old one.
Yeah. This, go to the Wikipedia article. It's great. It has all of them.
It's funny.
It's very funny. Your code name pick of the week. Actually, you got two.
Yeah. These kind of go hand in hand, and they've been code name picks on the show before, but I'll tell you why I'm bringing them back up. So the code name picks are Andromeda and Polaris. We know that Andromeda is a code name Microsoft's been using for this legendary and so far non-existent dual screen device that looks like the Courier. But there's also a software part of this that is codenamed Andromeda as well.
Is the mayor in town? What's going on?
Yep. I know. There's been so many horns today. I'm like, what is going on out there?
Oh, it's the first day of Carnival.
That's it. So Andromeda and Polaris, there's two parts to each of these things. They are both a piece of operating system stack and a composable shell, we think. Andromeda OS is the OS that's going to run on top of the Windows Core OS that Microsoft's building, which is kind of like one core, but even smaller. And they're going to take this new Windows Core OS, put Andromeda OS layer on top, and then put the Andromeda shell. And that's what's going to run on these Andromeda dual screen devices. Polaris is that same kind of a stack, Windows Core OS, the Polaris OS piece, and then the Windows desktop shell that's going to power some future kinds of devices that need a more compact core and a smaller footprint, more manageable. So neither of these things exist yet, except they are starting to show up in references in the Microsoft SDKs for Windows 10 Redstone 5. The Walking Cat's been dissecting that code. He posted today a whole bunch of references to Polaris and Andromeda OS. He's been kind of tracking this all along and been the source of a lot of the rumors and us finding out about this. But now that this stuff is starting to show up in such a concerted way in Redstone 5, I'm wondering if these things are closer than we think. I kept thinking maybe we'd see the Andromeda device late this year, maybe even 2019. But the fact that this is so dominant in the documents right now makes me think maybe we're going to see some things with this new Windows Core OS and the new composable shell come out sooner rather than later. So that's why I made it the codename pick.
Nice.
Paul, you wanted to say something on that, right?
Yeah, so I from a timing perspective, I think the reason we're seeing this is because we're looking at the RS5 SDK.
Yeah.
So I do think of it as Andromeda as the device, and then this platform is kind of an RS5 timeframe. So that makes a little bit of sense.
Yeah,
the thing I wanted to say, you and I had talked about this topic ahead of time today, and I was writing and have not completed an article about this topic. And the thing I just wanted to kind of get out was I kind of alluded to it earlier. I look at one core as the new version of what Windows 10 was meant to be, you know, the core of Windows that can be cross-platform and speak to all these different devices or work on all these different devices. But the user experience that sits on top of it is very different. And you can see that today if, you know, they don't have phone anymore. But if you were to compare Windows Phone when we had that to the PC, to Xbox One, to Surface Hub, you know, it's same app model in some ways, but the UX is completely different. And I think this is just a more modular version of that same kind of vision. And then the Andromeda device itself, I mean, the rumors are this kind of dual screen device. From what I can tell, it's meant to be reading and note taking, you know, and something you can do at the same time. And whether there is a market for that or not is kind of hard to say, but you were talking about HoloLens earlier, and I think that kind of business/vertical market is where this thing might make some sense. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they're going to aim it at students, but also at executives who, you know, need to do these kinds of tasks. Yeah. And it is going to be a new device type. That's what Microsoft likes to do with Surface branded devices in particular. It's not going to be a phone, although it might have, you know, cellular capabilities. Telephony. It might be. And always on.
Maybe it's going to be always connected, right?
Yeah, you know, of course, one of these always connected things. I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. I really thought they were going to talk about these kinds of things at Build. I really thought that was where they were going to say, okay, well, here's where we're going with Windows, guys. It's going to be this Windows Core OS thing, composable shell. Nope. No mention. So.
I mean, their decision to kind of demote Windows, both literally and from kind of a marketing perspective, I think was a little bit of a mistake, and it may have precluded them from doing that because that would have seemed like too big of a push. Yeah, but again, you know, I think they need to recast Build a little bit more to focus more on the future. And that would have been a nice, that would have been nice. That thing, the Surface Hub, this VR or VR slash MR thing with SharePoint. I mean, yeah, there's your show. That is a compelling 45 minutes, you know, but that's not what we got.
Yeah, isn't that weird? I don't know.
Yeah.
I think we could do a beer pick of the week right about now. This
wine
is something
slushies.
Paul is just going to love. If you love wine slushies, you're going to love this beer of the week.
All right. You will love wine slushies.
That's so the worst recommendation.
It's funny you brought up wine slushies. Because the beer pick of the week is a hybrid beer wine type of a thing.
Oh, boy.
It's called Almanac Rosé Sour. It is basically rosé wine meeting a beer. And Almanac is based in San Francisco. When they talk about this, they put in all caps, sour farmhouse ale aged in wine barrels with Merlot grapes, rose hips, and rose petals. So obviously it's
That's
pink.
That's disgusting.
So,
you know what?
How would this be in slushy form?
You know what?
Freeze
I bet it would be kind of good in slushy form.
Freeze it. What is the maximum amount of alcohol you can have to freeze something? Because I know
before it won't freeze, right? Because that's a good point.
I mean, if wine freezes, it's 10%. So beer
this,
probably
this is what
freeze.
Yeah makes vodka slushies next to impossible task for a homeowner.
As, as delicious as those would be, as wonderful as those would taste.
All right. Yeah. Now this is a good beer for people who say I like wine but I don't like beer, and also for people who say I want to try a sour but I'm afraid of it.
Lagunitas
kind of
did
like
something
one of
similar
these,
to this. Yeah.
Also
bringing
for
all
people
the good
that like to mix
together.
Alcohol for some reason because they've never had a headache before.
You could just put some wine in your beer. You could.
You could. Yeah. But probably not a good idea.
Oh, geez. I literally saw someone mix red wine and white wine in a glass and drink it this weekend.
Huh.
Well, that's vulgar,
no, that
but
is
it's
not
going to give you...
A wine slushy is okay. That's nuts.
I don't know. I think it's on a par with wine slushy, and Charlie Sheen is a timid astronomer. I think they're all in the same box.
I'm telling you, this movie is fantastic.
I bought it, Paul. I bought it, $7.99. I could have rented it for $3.99, but I thought, no, Paul loves this movie. Even though it's only 64% on Rotten Tomatoes, I'm buying it. I'm all in on it. Paul, I trust your recommendations.
We want your recommendation next week, your review.
We could do Paul's cheap movie pick of the week.
Cheap movie, $1 rental of the week.
Paul's $1 rental. I think that would be pretty good.
I'm going with another romantic comedy, guys. Sorry.
I think Paul's $1 rental is the new star of the show. Yep.
Yeah.
We do this show every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific. If Leo shows up, usually I'm here within the first half hour anyway. That would be 2 p.m. Eastern time. That would be 20,000 UTC. 2,000. No, it wouldn't even be that. It'd be 1,800.
Too many wine slushies.
20,000 in the year.
Why does my head hurt so much?
20,000 B.C. Contoso is alive. If you want to watch live, you should go to twit.tv/live and join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. There are lots of fun in there. They're a gang without motorcycles. They're so good. And you can also get on-demand versions. Just go to twit.tv/www, download audio or video of this show, and or subscribe in your favorite podcatcher, and you'll get it every week, the minute it's available. Paul Thurrott can be found at Thurrott.com, Thurrott.com. Become a premium member. It's worth it, says Leo Laporte. I spent my money. Now you spend
also,
yours.
Rival is excellent, says Paul Thurrott.
Yep. You wouldn't know about that if you didn't listen to this show.
You know,
see?
I'm thinking a night of wine slushies and The Arrival starring Charlie Sheen would possibly be the perfect night.
See, the
Only
reason...
Only if you wore a headset.
The reason I'm confused is because there's, of course, that Academy Award-nominated Arrival from last couple years ago with Amy
Adams. Oh, no, not that one. Adams. That's a steaming pile of crap. This is This is the real deal.
It did win an Oscar, but okay.
No, that was a pretty good movie. I will say, I'll go out on a limb and say I like the Charlie Sheen version better.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
I know.
Nominated for a Best Picture, but no, you like the Charlie Sheen better.
Sure.
Okay.
I mean, if you like Slow Moving and Foggy, the new Arrival is pretty good.
it is a little foggy. No, I'm watching. We're watching it tonight, Charlie Sheen. Honey, get the negligee out. Charlie Sheen's on TV.
Get the popcorn maker going.
Fire up the popcorn. You know what we do? We buy the. This is my tip of the week. We buy the popcorn on the cob.
Yeah, we do the same thing.
It's so good.
So we have this popcorn maker, and you put like the orange salt stuff in it and coconut butter, and it makes it like the movies.
Yeah.
And you have to shave off the corn from the cob because I live in, you know, Amish country now. That's how you get popcorn here. Apparently they grow it somewhere.
It was a pick of the week. Alex Lindsay picked it a couple of weeks ago on Mac Break Weekly, and they immediately sold out all of the popcorn on the cob for the entire season.
All right, so I have a popcorn on the cob tip as well, which is this. There are different versions. Don't get the kettle corn.
No.
Kettle corn is terrible popcorn if you're going to put butter on it.
Yeah. No.
Kettle corn is only for like sugar. You know, you put like
sugar hams. Yeah.
Yeah, we made that mistake. We mixed and matched, and it's no good. You got to get the other kind.
Lisa literally bought 100.
Like cobs?
Yeah.
Jeez, really?
Yeah.
Where do you even find these?
Uncommon good.
You don't mean like.
I'll show you.
No, do you mean just like regular corn on the cob?
No. Yeah.
Well, no. It's popcorn.
Popcorn.
It's corn that's made for popcorn.
The cob.
I've never seen
it. It's hard. It comes hard. It's like we buy it literally down the street, like on the street. But you get it at the farmer's market.
You can microwave it. It comes with a paper bag. I don't know if this is one of them. It comes in a paper bag. I guess this is.
So wait, how many of those things you get for $16?
Yeah, that seems like a little bit pricey. That's a little.
Yeah, it does. How many is that? Five, maybe?
I don't know. Maybe four.
I think we pay 50 cents for each one of those.
Oh, man. But that's because you're in Lower Macungie Valley. If you're not, if you don't have access to the Lower Macungie Valley.
They may literally grow this at a place I could walk to from here.
Probably
too. Like corn everywhere here.
But this stuff, ours comes with brown paper bags. And she bought 100, and I think they're like a buck each if you buy 100 of them.
That is amazing.
But. You make it in the
pot. So you microwave it.
You can microwave it, which is awesome.
Oh,
it's fine. It doesn't taste like microwave popcorn. You do in the bag. You seal up the bag. It's in a brown paper bag. It microwaves. And then you put butter on it, and it's the best popcorn I've ever had. It's really good.
I got to look for it now.
Yeah. It's like Indian corn or something. Amazon has it, I think, too.
Okay.
Or move to Pennsylvania.
Yeah, you know, I'm a little jealous that you could just walk out the door and get your.
Yeah,
it grows on trees there, I bet.
Yeah, popcorn grows on trees. Yeah, I'm not seeing the brand we got. I think they sold out for the season. I think we bought them out. We thought we cornered the popcorn market.
At the beginning of the season.
We
literally get this every Sunday.
I'm so jealous that you can get this at your local farmer's market.
Yeah.
Man.
Hmm.
Yeah, because it's expensive if you get it on Amazon.
But Contoso has it, guys.
Contoso, corn on the cob.
Contoso, corn.
All right, folks. Thanks for joining us. I hope you enjoyed this show because it took a lot out of me.
You better have.
Yeah. I think I took 5 years off my life.
It was like a fever dream.
Mary Jo Foley is on ZDNet.com at allaboutmicrosoft.com. Oh, and don't forget Paul's books, leanpub.com. Help him buy more popcorn.
That's right. The popcorn doesn't pay for itself.
No, sirree. It does pop itself. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.